Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Ted Jenkin bringing you the Shrimp Tank here. We bring it to you every week on Atlanta Business Radio X, where we interview the brightest and best business owners in the state of Georgia about the do's and don'ts of starting, growing, and running a successful business. And we also will be bringing you all this year live pitches across the state of Georgia from young entrepreneurs who are going to be in front of our panel of unbelievably successful business owners about their business. They bring it to the Shrimp Tank. We don't fund them. We're not giving them money now, right? But they show us these unbelievable ideas. A few weeks ago, we had an unbelievable event up at Mill Creek High School. We saw some amazing pitches. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who I want to bring on, who's the executive director and founder of the KSU Entrepreneurship Center, which is booming right now. And what did you think about those pitches a couple of weeks ago that we saw from the kids at Mill Creek?
They were awesome, weren't they? I mean, to see that kind of energy, that kind of enthusiasm, and that kind of attitude and spirit, it's very inspiring.
You know, if I could have gotten my hair braided, I would have signed up right then and there for getting a hair braid.
You'd look good with a hair braid. I'd like that. Yeah, absolutely.
I thought I saw it with Bo Derek and 10 many years ago. And ever since then, I always thought that braids would work well, but probably not at this juncture of my life. But so we bring you every week. We're talking about entrepreneurship and growing entrepreneurship in the state of Georgia. We're seeing more and more kids that are getting this notion that, hey, maybe I can take control of my own life. I can set my own destiny and be very successful. And usually before we bring our guest on, and we've got an unbelievable guest today who's owned multiple businesses. So it's going to be a lot of fun doing this interview today. But I was just curious in here. I always like bringing you a few stories that I read. I love reading Cuban's blog. He's really one of the ultimate entrepreneurs. And so check this out. He's now launched in Dallas urinal socks. Yes,
urinal
I said it's
socks.
Urinal socks. They're literally socks right here that you can see socks with a dude that's taking a whiz right on the socks. Now, I know that everyone's into the whole sock thing now that, you know, your socks got to be cute and funny and patterns and all kinds
of
stuff.
It's like pocket squares.
Yeah, it's like pocket squares. You know, it's good stuff in here. You spend $110 for I don't even know what. Maybe $150, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so you think something like that's going to be successful? What do you tell that guy? You're teaching entrepreneurship. A kid comes up to you and says, I want to get in the sock business.
Hey, you know what? I've had it before. I had a student do stomp socks where they had socks and on the sock you had what you supported, and then you had on the bottom of the sock what you were against. So for example, you could put the University of Georgia logo on your sock and then have the University of Florida logo on the bottom of the sock. So you're stomping it out as you walk around.
No kidding.
I think their biggest seller was breast cancer. So they put like the breast cancer symbol on the socks and on the bottom they put cancer and you're kind of stomping out cancer. So hey, you know what? There's money to be made in socks.
I'll tell you what, I had a friend of ours that did some of the collegiate licensing for a company called FanPans. And basically what they do is that you could be, you know, an alumni or go to the school at Alabama or Tennessee, and they've got a Tennessee cake pan and ice cubes and all kinds of stuff that you can make from there. So I guess an idea germinates all the time. I
Absolutely.
Also saw a really interesting article on Entrepreneur, and then I want to bring on our guest today that talks about the 15 most profitable small businesses that are coming out. Believe it or not, I guess I like this because I'm in the industry. They say the number one most profitable small business to start, accounting, tax preparation, bookkeeping, and payroll services.
Yeah, that's not surprising though, given the complexity of that, right? So the complexity of those kinds of services, and that's something that a lot of sort of accounting folks with that background and people can do that part-time. I know somebody's built a very large business where he hires accounting people who can work part-time from home and do sales tax for large corporations.
Yeah, I'll bet. You know, the way that they get you in those businesses, by the way, is they get you on this drip, right? You start paying $300 a month and $400 a month. And then after a while, you realize that you don't want to do this activity at all. So you end up just spending more money each and every month. It's kind of like when you hire your IT guy. That's what happens. You spend a little bit and then you just end up get more money every month.
Exactly.
Well, we've got a great guest today. And like I said, you know, our idea on the Shrimp Tank is that we're trying to bring you some of the brightest and best entrepreneurs in the state of Georgia. I feel really excited to bring on our guest today, Brandon Lewis. I've known Brandon for a long time, and what's really cool about it is that he is probably one of the quintessential, I would say, serial entrepreneurs. And when I say serial entrepreneurs, sometimes people stay in the same business. They open up three technology companies, or they've got, you know, three businesses in the automotive industry, But he's got three businesses, I feel, in three very different industries that I'm aware of. There might be four, five, and six we learn about today. But he's the owner of a company called Benchmark Consulting. It's a very interesting company they'll talk about today in the insurance industry. He's also the president of Click Models. So imagine being in the modeling business at the same time that you're in the insurance industry. And he's also the proprietor of Supply and Demand and Establishment. If you haven't checked out Supply and Demand, you're in Atlanta, you really should. I think it's the best bourbon bar in the city. And it comes to that old type of speakeasies that are out there. So we want to welcome Brandon to the show today.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. A very exciting platform and just an honor to be here.
So I wanted to talk about today. I mean, there's so many businesses to talk about. I'm curious about how you got started in the modeling business. I can see why somebody would get started in the modeling
Stop
business.
Stop flirting with me.
But how did you even get involved with that?
I wanted to play baseball and football and hockey in high school. That's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to be a lawyer. Like a lot of people, I lost a touch of focus towards the end of my junior year and continued sports and was going to go to law school and then wound up getting a couple of modeling jobs in New York. It was a kind of a burgeoning marketplace for males at that time, like 1983, 1984, and kind of got bit by the bug and got into the business while I was going to college. And what I decided pretty quickly after spending some time in the business was that I absolutely did not want to be a model and didn't want to be in the fashion business, but that I wanted to own the company that actually represented the people. I befriended a gentleman who I'm still partners with today, who was the son of the founder of Click, which at the time was the third largest fashion agency in the world. And we developed a relationship. And when I told him I was going to open up my own agency, he laughed and said, okay. He says, well, when it fails, come to me and I'll give you a job. Well, lo and behold, I moved to North Carolina and I opened the agency because I had business with R.J. Reynolds and Winston-Salem and Nabisco and wound up doing extremely well. Wound up selling the company to Click and becoming a partner and moving the facility to Atlanta because it was more of an accessible hub than North Carolina was.
By the way, Hanks, he is a really good baseball player. Like he plays in like semi-pro leagues and stuff like that.
And what position?
Third and first.
But third and first, yeah, nice. Yeah.
More first now than third.
Yeah.
Your reactions are slowing down a little bit. So. Yeah. So that's kind of, how I got into that business and was going to be an attorney and realized that this was my calling. Did not wind up getting a law degree, just got a business one.
So, we talk a lot about in business inventory management and, and inventory is basically a strategic bet, right? I'm betting that I can sell this in the future. You are dealing with talent and people. So what kind of unique challenges does that offer?
Well, it's a great question. And this I've really watched over the last 15 years, a lot of these questions posed. There was a time in the late 90s where the word on the street was that models and associated advertising was going to shift to drones and they were just going to wind up doing caricatures and, they would be able to computer generate people. But that failed because there was no personality attachment. Then as we got out of the 90s into 2000, 2001, you found that all of a sudden the advertising industry discovered big movies like it was never there before. And so the magazine business started to shift, a paradigm shift, to where instead of putting a model on the cover, who most people, except for young daughters and young girls in school, mm-hmm. would know, they put on Lucy Liu on the cover, who had a movie like Charlie's Angels coming out with a $400 million projected take, and they realized that that magazine would sell through at 2 to 3 times the normal rate because it was getting promoted on TV, in an organic way, because of the timing of the movie. And hence, since that happened, the industry shifted. Couple that with 9/11 and the fact that publishing somewhat disappeared. In 1998, there were probably 1,800 to 2,000 magazines published in the U.S. That number dropped all the way to 500 or 600. And I mean real, I don't mean local publications, but national and regional. So, you had a big shift. Then the internet exploded. And so inventory, when you only needed models for magazines and billboard advertising, you needed a set number of models every year. And I don't know what that number was, but somebody knew what it was. all of a sudden the internet explodes and you have tens of thousands of companies that need images of people. Even though you're, you know, you're selling via the internet, you still have to advertise the product. Some websites do it by just showing it on a hanger. Most find that that doesn't work as well. And so that is kind of how the inventory has gone back and forth. And then you have what I call the Kim Kardashian effect, which is the effect of celebrity for the regular person, the person with very little talent. And that's no offense to her, because her mom is certainly brilliantly gifted in making money.
apparently her stepdad too, right?
Absolutely.
No matter what sex he is.
Well, that's right. And so, but that gave hope to women across the world to say, you know what? I'm pretty, I'm 5'2", and I've got a kind of a family that's kind of a movers and shakers, so mm-hmm. I can be a celebrity. And that drives a new genre of talent, which is, you know, internet-driven, social media-driven, and just, I mean, look, Paris Hilton's never done anything, you know, ever, except be the granddaughter of a very famous family.
Hey, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank here on Atlanta Business Radio X. We bring you this show every Tuesday from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. You can always catch a full replay of this broadcast and all of our broadcasts, great interviews that we've done so far and will continue to do on shrimptankpodcast.com. And we'll certainly get you the live schedule when we're out and about on the road. We're talking today with Brandon Lewis, who is a friend of ours and a serial entrepreneur, a proprietor of multiple establishments, no pun intended, and president of Click Models, and also an owner in Benchmark Consulting. I'm curious, you know, as entrepreneurs hear this show, I feel like two of your businesses are in the glamour business, right? Models, sort of evident, but the bar business has always had sort of a glamorized side to it. And I'm wondering about how you would advise somebody out there who's thinking about getting into the restaurant business, the bar business, which I know is a very, very difficult business, about how you temper yourself with the glamour of the business while still trying to maintain and make this thing profitable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's everyone can joke about it. You know, there's the joke, if you want to make $1 million in the restaurant business, you need to start with $1.5 million. and in the spirit of not going down that road, what gives us the ability to be competitive and maybe have some influence in that marketplace is that, you know, we come from an area where we think we have a good handle on what tastes are relevant, and we have some good vision because we do a lot of work all over the world. It exposes us to new things and new markets that, you know, you might not see if you were just working in a local area. And I mean, I'm going to just put it out there the way we have seen it, and that is that, you know, beautiful women are a controlling factor in the influencer market as it relates to food and beverage, as it relates to fashion, and as it relates to a lot of things in advertising. A lot of people don't want to say that, and they don't want to say, well, that doesn't make any difference. And I can tell you that it certainly does. That doesn't mean that we understand how to be restaurateurs or adult beverage operators better in a bar scenario. But we have been exposed to, I think, different areas between Miami and Paris and Brazil, where we get to see certain things as they evolve, and we feel that we may have a good idea of what might make sense in our local community. And that's how we've kind of separated them.
Yeah, I think, Hanks, they control at home, too. It isn't just at bars and restaurants, too.
What's that? Right?
Well, we're talking about adding women to the mix. It helps. Yeah. At home, too, it happens as well.
So absolutely. Absolutely.
So how has being a serial entrepreneur affected your family relationships? Because that just seems like one business would sort of have take its toll, so to speak, but have multiple. How's that had an impact?
You know, that's a really good question. And you know, I think that it's it's not for everybody. You know, my family, I'm an only child. I came from a small family. My mother was an executive at Estee Lauder. Before that, she was at a record company. She worked from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. I had to make my own dinner. She took the bus and the train home, and she was a real go-getter. My father was an entrepreneur in his own right in the commodity and investment banking field. And, you know, I always felt like, you know, I would not be one of those people that wound up at a Fortune 500 company. Although when Ted references glamour, you know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs probably look at, you know, the guy who gets to go to the Fortune 5 and, you know, has, you know, his whole life pretty much planned out for him and gets to show up and everything's ready. Sometimes that may look glamorous to an entrepreneur in the beginning, but I think as you gain confidence and make some mistakes along the way and survive them, that you feel pretty empowered to do things on your own or with a small group of people and put the time in. The reality is the balance of being an entrepreneur means that, you know, you take phone calls on Saturday. And you know, you don't necessarily get 2 weeks vacation. You know, you may not get any days, but you at some point will cross the line where you know, that work has added up to allow you to have some flexibility, and you have to surround yourself with good people. I mean,
you know, I doing an interview like this, we have a lot of material to go through because of the multiple businesses that you have. I know we talked a little bit about the modeling business and a little bit about the bar business, but I think the one that's most intriguing to me is that most people don't wake up in the morning and say, I want to get into the insurance business. And by the way, folks, I'm not talking about selling life insurance. You're not like Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day trying to peddle people a life insurance policy. I'm talking about this middleman idea of helping companies get the most from the insurance companies. I'm curious if you just tell the listeners a little bit about how Benchmark Consulting works, what the business is, because the first time I remember Brandon saying this term to me, have you ever heard of diminution of value? And I said, excuse me, is it like a German or something like that? I didn't know what it was. How did you even get into that business and how does it work?
Well, it's a great story. You know, we had also had a publishing business in the late 90s through 2004 that we acquired, my father and I, and we wound up selling it to Hearst Media. And I probably left that off my bio, but
yeah, it's a small company.
Yeah. And after selling, I was, you know, trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And I had a few things going on. I was looking at a radio station in St. Louis with a group of friends of ours that had a radio station. And we were trying to figure out what was next. Of course, Click was ever present. And a friend of mine at the time had a company that was growing because of Hurricane Katrina and some major hurricanes in the Cayman Islands. And he needed someone to run his company. And I remember I was in Hawaii for a month just relaxing. He called me seven times.
No, it was great.
No. And he called me seven times and he said, look, I even if you can only help me for 90 days or 6 months. And so finally I said, all right, I'll come on. I'll help you for a year because I can't do anything in 90 days. I'll get your company organized. I'll get you set up. We'll get some programs in place and you know, grow this thing. And then I'll hire my replacement. Well, you know, I had wanted to be a lawyer and the business of public insurance adjusting. What I didn't realize was my experience in buying and building real estate was going to come into play because the damages that occur, most of the damages are related to real property. And they involve big commercial buildings or residential structures. The ability to help people was incredible. And the understanding of the landscape of insurance, which, you know, quite frankly, is an uneven playing field because you got a company that's a $1 billion company with a lot of smart people that do the same thing every day. And their job is to retain earnings for their shareholders. And that's very respectable. People have losses and the policy is a clear contract. It says you have to prove your loss. And the reality is, unless you do it and have experience at it, you're not going to ever get paid or indemnified quite in line with what the loss value probably is. So I got addicted pretty quickly. And then baptism by fire, I'm in the business for about 10 months working on hiring my replacement and an earthquake, one of the largest in recorded history hits Chile in South America. And the former vice president of my publishing company's cousin happened to be the minister of the interior.
He's not a bad person to know.
No, he called me up and said, would you be interested in practicing and helping, you know, the Navy in Chile and some other companies? And I said, well, sure. Do they license our profession? Well, no, they don't even know what your profession is over there. So long story short, we went through some political wrangling and we had the right connections. And, you know, we wound up helping dozens of companies and really, you know, change people's lives. And so once that happened, I was probably going to be a lifer because it's an incredible niche market.
Basically what happens, whether it's an individual or family, Hanks has a house.
Yep.
You do have a house, right?
I do have a house.
I was just making sure. And so basically a big old tree comes down in the middle of the night and crashes into his roof, his first thing is he's going to call one of these big insurance companies and they're going to hose him? Is that basically what's
going to happen? Well, I'm not a guy that subscribes to the insurance company's evil. I don't believe that. What I believe is, you know, insurance companies, again, they've got a job to do. They've got adjusters that have 200 or 300 cases on their desk. You know, they got about an hour to spend on each one of them. Your loss is one of many. You have your house, which is one of your biggest assets, if not your biggest asset. You care about the retention and value and the proper diagnosis. When you have a complex tax return, Ted, you're going to tell your clients, or you're going to recommend an in-house CPA to assist, or if somebody's got to do tax planning or sheltering, same thing. When you have a legal issue, you hire a lawyer. Financial issue, you hire a CPA. When you have an insurance claim that involves real property over $20,000, if you don't hire a professional public adjuster, you're basically telling the insurance company, go ahead and you tell me what you should pay me, which is the equivalent of you not having the time to file your taxes and going to the IRS and saying, I don't have time to file them, so here's my W-2, will you file my taxes for me? They will. The result may not be as good as it could be if you had a good strategist working for you. Same scenario.
So with all of this experience you have in all of these businesses, what would you consider your biggest success and your biggest failure?
Wow, I don't know that I've ever thought about it that way. You know, my biggest failure, you know, probably in the publishing side, we had a couple of magazines that we didn't push through that I could have pushed through that I was gun shy on, and probably could have changed the dynamic of our sale at the time. And so I think that could be a failure, but I failed at so many things and I don't think the show is long enough for me to go through all of them. And
yeah, but failure is the necessary hangover of success.
Without question, I wouldn't have the confidence to do any of the crazy things that I have got myself involved in today if I hadn't have made a tremendous amount of mistakes. I've never learned from anything that I've got lucky at. I've only learned the hard way. I mean, I know it's not that way for everybody, but for me, I did most of my learning, you know, by falling on my face.
Yeah. Hey, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank here on Atlanta Business Radio X. We come to you every Tuesday from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who is the founder and executive director of the KSU Entrepreneurship Center. It is a booming part of what's happening in the state of Georgia. You really ought to get over there and check it out sometime. And you see these kids and their eyes light up and what's happening with them and just the power. I mean, just the last week I was at some event and I met two other kids that were involved with the program and just so excited about what their future is going to look like. And we feel like in the schools here in the state of Georgia, this is going to be a track at some point that will happen. Some point kids will say, well, what do I want to study? Do I want to study trigonometry or do I want to study entrepreneurship? Look, I can't remember half of those things they taught me in 9th or 10th grade or whatever grade it was. I wasn't paying attention. But you should go always to check out the replays, obviously, the interview we're having with Brandon today at shrimptankpodcast.com, or you can follow us at Shrimp Tank on Twitter. Great information that we're going to give you about entrepreneurs and what's going on in the entrepreneurial world. At this turn, we like to do a segment that we call Hot or Not. No, I wish this was about models because Brandon and I probably would have started with the dinner we had with Nikki Taylor, which, you know, was pretty...
Forgot about
yeah,
that.
Pretty darn amazing to have Nikki Taylor sit there and talk to you for a whole dinner.
Absolutely.
Pretty cool stuff. Much, much taller. I knew she was tall, but until you stand next to her and go, I'm short, it wasn't a good thing. So on our Hot or Not, the first one that I have on here, because I know that you've got different kinds of businesses. Is it a good idea to take on equity partners in a business? Is it a hot or not?
Well, do I have to stick to the one word answer or
no?
Whatever
you want to say.
The adage of more partners, more headaches is probably true a lot of times. But I found through trial and error that, you know, unless you're willing to shoulder the entire burden of financial burden yourself, and unless you're willing to basically do all the work yourself, a true entrepreneur is not really a true entrepreneur without a core of really good people, in my opinion. I mean, inventors aside, you know, you need a good team. And so an equity partner who also maybe brings some intellectual collateral to the mix, I think is invaluable.
Right,
especially so if you're going to do.
You're saying just taking cash, not such a great idea. But if you get cash and you can get some intellectual capital, then it might make sense.
I think so, because just cash is going to mean that someone's not going to ever care about the intimate relationship you have with the passion for the product, and they're only going to be looking for the return on the money versus somebody who really understands what you're doing and is offering something to expand it. And of course, you give yourself a better chance at success if you've got somebody in with money who also brings something that you're not paying for. So that's what I've tried to do. And, you know, we've had some luck with a few people like that.
All right. So you are somebody who owns multiple businesses. So hot or not, focus or juggle multiple things?
Focus depends on
how much Adderall you're prescribed. you know, I think that entrepreneurs probably inherently are jugglers. I think that certain people are really good and do better at doing multiple things. I have learned that my strengths, because I've had many people say to me, how do you do this with that? And I say, honestly, the public adjusting world and Benchmark, and even my partner at Benchmark, some of the things that happen over the course of a day or an hour or a few minutes in that business help align perspective for me and the other things that I do. Now, it wasn't like that 15 years ago, but as you evolve, I think you'll better gauge your appetite for juggling versus focus. If you're focusing on something, you know, you're still going to be juggling. I don't care if it's your personal life, your family, it could be school, it could be cousins, it could be, there's always going to be things to juggle. So anyone who says, you know, you can't do this, this, and this because you have to focus. Well, the only one who gets to focus, I think 100% on anything is one of those people that works at a Fortune 500 company that's paid to do one thing and one thing only. And if they don't focus, then they're out. I mean, pretty quickly. So I believe just about everybody else has no choice but to be a pretty good juggler.
Hey, we're sitting here with Brandon Lewis, who's the proprietor of Supply and Demand, an establishment, president of Click Models, an owner in Benchmark Consulting. We're talking about our hot or not round here, which I really like. So hot or not, we ask this one in every one of our shows, is do you have a business plan when you start the business, hot or not?
I'm going to say hot if you're venture capitaling or you're fundraising. You're not going to get anybody to invest without a business plan. The idea that the business plan is going to keep you on the straight and narrow and be your roadmap is fool's gold, because it's going to change more times than you can keep up with changing the narrative. But I think you need a basic plan to help you get to the starting gate. And I think for up and coming entrepreneurs that are either in at school now or just getting out, I think the reason that you write a business plan once, twice, or three times before you even go to market is because most of the time you're going to find out that that's not a business worth doing. Or to realize that you didn't think of one really important thing, like the barrier of entry is not reachable under these circumstances. And I think that's the good use for a business plan.
Some of the ones that Brandon and I have seen over the years say at the bottom of it, we may or may not return your capital. You know,
in very big, bold letters.
We know how the money goes in. We just don't know how the money comes out.
Not
that's
sure how
problem.
It's ever going out. Right.
All right. Speaking of money, hot or not, bootstrap or take on additional debt?
Hey, you got them in deep thought here. On that
yeah,
one, huh?
You know, cash is king. If you don't have capital, you don't have a business. I don't care how good of an entrepreneur you are. You know, you can't sell the air, and you can't sell time. So, and even if you're selling time on a radio show or a podcast, you still have to have all the other things that go with it to sell it. So if you can't sell either one of those things, you need to take on debt in order to get your product out there if you don't have the cash.
All right, we got two more here in hot or not, Chris. I got one here. Street smarts or book smarts? Hot or not?
God.
And then I'm going to ask Brandon a follow-up.
And you're sitting next to somebody who works in a university setting. So just throwing that out there before you answer this question.
You know, 10 years ago, I would have answered this question by saying, I learned everything I learned, you know, on the street. And as I've gotten older, what I have realized in reflection is that everything I learned every day, because you never stop learning. I've never stopped learning, and I realized some of the great lessons that I had, you know, even in kindergarten, believe it or not. You know, I'm not so old that I can't even remember a couple of days from back then when I got slapped with a ruler. But I think you get your education, and if you are in a position to get it and you enjoy it, and you, you know, you really, you savor it, because those opportunities, it's very hard to go back. You know, I regret not getting my law degree, even though I would have never been a lawyer, and I could go back. I'm 9 credits away. But, you know, it would have been something that I would have finished. On the flip side of that, timing is everything. And the timing for me, for what I did at the time in reflection, was the right decision also. So I think there's a really important blend there of understanding how to deal with things. And I think the arena of education is so important. And the way I look at it in talking to young people today, like the gentleman I got to mentor for a little while from the university who came over to Supply and Demand, is that I believe people take education more seriously today than when I was in high school. And when I say that, there were a lot, you know, college and further education was certainly not frowned upon, but it was maybe thought about in a little bit of a different way. And today people take it really, really seriously. I believe more seriously than
I was asking that question because, you know, one of the things I admire about Brandon and him running businesses, the ability to see space. And what I mean by that is that, you know, whether it's he sees space in the furniture that he picks for, you know, the bars that I've been in, which is incredibly great, or just the space and the way that you might open a new concept or something like that. You know, how do you tell a young entrepreneur that's listening to this about how to think about seeing that space where people will tell you it's dumb, it's stupid, it won't make sense, it won't work in the city, you can't get it done? That's typically what happens.
Yeah, you know, you just, I believe that true artists or people that have vision aren't going to let anybody tell them that they can't do something. And my whole thing is take the swing, take the shot. If you believe in it, just do it. I also think there's a level of understanding where you believe you can influence somebody, or you understand, as importantly, what people like. I think one of our successes has been that we understand and we know what we like, and we feel like the people that we know might like it too, since we like it.
So I have to jump in here when you said you took on that student, and I just have to sort of clarify and thank you sort of publicly for mentoring that student. And that's one of the things that I think makes our entrepreneurship center special, is when we're surrounded by such great entrepreneurs, and 100% of them will be placed in some kind of mentorship, apprenticeship, or some type of opportunity so they can learn from seasoned, been there, done that people. They'll forget that student that went to your place will forget my lecture. They won't forget that experience. Mm-hmm. So for that, I thank you.
Oh, well, listen, it's so amazing to spend time with enthusiastic youth. And I think, you know, even meeting him that day, you know, it reminded me of myself. I mean, I used to, when I was going through college, I waited some tables and I was a bartender and I had a briefcase, and I would show up to my bartending shift with my briefcase, and everybody made fun of me, like, you know, who's the bartender? What's he smuggling bottles of rum out in the briefcase? But I wanted to be a businessman, and I felt like I needed to, you know, whenever I wasn't behind the bar, or if it was a break, I would go and open my briefcase, and I'd be, who knows what I was doing. I don't know if I was taking notes, or I might have had pictures of girls in there. I don't know. What's that saying? Fake it until you make it. I mean, I it was part of my feeling, and, you know, working with younger people and being able to, you know, give them some insight, right, wrong, or indifferent, and encourage their risk-taking willingness and their appetite to explore and be confident in their beliefs, I think is crucial, because, you know, most people will tell you can't, you shouldn't, don't, the conventional wisdom of that will unfortunately siphon the energy and the enthusiasm out of most people, because they're just not in a position to go against that.
Absolutely.
Hey, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank here on Atlanta Business Radio X. We come to you every Tuesday from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., bringing you some of the brightest and best entrepreneurs in the state of Georgia. I come every week with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who is the founder and executive director of the KSU Entrepreneurship Center. Boy, it's a lot to say when I say it all at one time.
That's a mouthful.
Apparently, you know, I try and get it all out there, Chris. But we've been sitting here interviewing Brandon Lewis. You can always catch a replay of the entire podcast on shrimptankpodcast.com, or follow us at Shrimp Tank on Twitter. All great places to get our information. We're coming now to our lightning round. We like the lightning round because we call this the Plead the Fifth. And if Brandon chooses, he can plead the fifth to one of these questions. He doesn't know what the questions are going to be yet, so he may or may not plead the fifth up front. I think last week we had our guest plead the fifth up front.
And we did.
It wasn't good for Chantel.
Who was here?
Yeah. So
it was Chantel was here.
Absolutely. We made her plead the fifth. We made her that uncomfortable.
We did. So Hanks, you want to hit us off on this? Or
all right. Best business idea.
Mine or someone else's?
Which is better? Your absolute best business idea. You can plead the fifth. You don't have to share it. But you know, we have listeners here that are about to take notes.
Yeah. In my career, moving to Atlanta.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if that's a business idea, but it was certainly a platform with a purpose for business.
That's big coming from a city guy.
Yeah. I mean, it was it was well thought out, and we felt like it was the right call, and I felt really good about it. And with the friends and relationships and contacts and things that I've been able to accomplish here, I don't know that nothing would compete with that.
So is it a good idea to marry an entrepreneur?
You know, it depends on what you want, but I certainly think it, I'll tell you, yes, it is. And the reason is that, you know, the most successful people that I know, okay, are involved in multiple things, and they may not all be going good at one time, right. But if one of them is going good and one of them is going bad and one of them is doing so, that means they're 100% ahead of the game, because people that don't have that ability, you know, find themselves a lot of times as the man on the outside looking in, trying to reinvent themselves all the time. And I think the great thing about entrepreneurship is the ability to have some real control over your destiny.
Strangest thing you've ever done as an entrepreneur? You still have the fifth that you can play.
No, you know,
that card.
I'm happy to share it. I think the strangest thing that I've ever done as an entrepreneur was to put my foot into, and then my entire body into, the world of insurance and risk management from the world of fashion and publishing. And at that time we had nightclubs and restaurants. So that was by far, it was an absolute paradigm shift.
So I've got one on here, and I know that you like to travel a lot, go to a lot of places. So are you retiring a yacht, or you retire on the beach?
I would retire on the beach, because I would just wind up trying to build my own little hotel and be back in business again, because on a yacht, I would have no way to be an entrepreneur, you know, because I can't sell anything to the fish.
The biggest thing you struggle with?
The biggest thing that I think I struggle with is the ability to manage time, not necessarily for myself, for my family, but for clients, for associates. Every day, I get up about 5:30, I respond to emails, and I kind of put my thoughts down on my memo tab on my iPad, which, what a wonderful device that has become. And I look at how many things I want to do that day, how many people I want to talk to, how many emails I want to send, how many thank yous I want to send, research half hours I want to take to look into some new things. And I realize that there's no chance that in the next 6 months I can even get maybe all of those done. But by starting my day like that every day, I think I get some of them done, and then I move the ones that didn't to the next day. And I think as long as you are always thinking ahead to the things that matter to you, I believe you will get those things done and organized. And that's kind of how I've done it.
All right, got one more here. I'm going to say, what are you most afraid of? And you can't include Dieter and Dan in the answer. Neither one of them.
What, not steak?
Him too. Most thing you're afraid of?
As it relates to business, I think not being relevant. Not being able to keep up with the ever evolving and moving technology, intellectual property that's coming out, and understanding how it interfaces with not just the businesses that I have, but the businesses I wish to maybe be in. I think my biggest fear is one day waking up and not being an influencer or relevant in any way.
So for folks that are listening today, I mean, you got a whole bunch of businesses. Is there a great way to get in touch with you if they want to learn how to book an event at Supply and Demand, or if they want to be able to get models? We've used them for our events before. Or heck, if a explosion goes off in their building and they need to get you between you and the insurance company, how can somebody get in touch with you, learn more about your businesses?
You know, just my email, BrandonSLewis@gmail. That way, and I keep that email because I've got emails for all the other companies, but, you know, in lieu of giving everybody every single email, which they may be able to get online from this later, they can email my personal email at BrandonSLewis@gmail, and I will be happy to, at 5:30 or 6 in the morning over the next few mornings, respond back to you.
And he will do it at 5:30 or 6 in the morning. Well, Brandon, thanks for coming on the show today. This is unbelievable. Look, for you young entrepreneurs and even successful entrepreneurs listening to this show, how could you get better advice than this today, learning how to juggle multiple businesses and multiple industries? It's the dream of a lot of entrepreneurs, not just to do one business, but to get multiple businesses up and going and live that exciting dream of being an entrepreneur. Next week on The Shrimp Tank, we're going to bring you Adam Camp, who's the owner of Fresh Filter Plus and another pretty cool business that we can talk about. We'll see you next week at Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The Shrimp Tank.